What's up, everyone? Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast. With me right here is Evan Damerl. On today's show, it's a live Locked On Cavs recap. We're going to talk about how the Cavs beat LeBron's Lakers and looked pretty good doing it. I want to thank you again for making us your first listen every day, or perhaps today, your Sunday evening listen. And today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. That's Prize Picks, and the promo code is Locked On.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
Evan, let's just dive right into this. Give the people what they're looking for here. Cavs beat the Lakers. It was a tough first quarter, tough first half, really. You know, down by six going into the half. Cavs ended up giving up a total of 36 points in the second half of this game. The Lakers in the second half shot 36% from the field, 30% from three, only took four free throws. LeBron had 15 in the second half for LA. No other Laker had more than six in the second half, and that was really Matt Ryan making threes in garbage time. Evan, when I look at this game and I look at how this happened, that some of the adversity the Cavs go through, the Cavs were just frankly just a much better basketball team than the Lakers, but they persevered through some stuff, persevered through some foul trouble for their bigs, and were truly, I think, excellent in the second half.
Yeah, the first half, and when you first said the Lakers scored 36, like you're going to say, in the first quarter. So the Lakers matched their scoring total for the first quarter through the entire second half, which is kind of crazy to think about. But I tweeted this in all seriousness. Like, outside of Anthony Davis and LeBron James, it's pretty grim for the Lakers. Like, yes, Russell Westbrook was very effective off the bench today for the Lakers. I think he finished the game with 19 points, 10 assists, 3 rebounds, 2 steals, a block. Like, he was pretty good for them as that sixth man. I think that's working for them. But the Lakers still feel like a team that is a move away from being actually serious, especially in the Western Conference. And, like, I thought they were bad. That just this game put it in perspective for me. And if it wasn't for the Cavs having Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, though, this wouldn't be a conversation in the second half. Because in the first half, you could, like you said, there was a lot of foul trouble from Mobley and Allen, who both actually ended up scoring 0 points in the first half on 0-6 mm-hmm. shooting. 42 points combined from Mitchell and Garland, and then he saw a little bit of just trickle-down offense to an extent. Like, Garland only scored 3 points on 1-7 shooting the second half. Donovan Mitchell still was red-hot with 12 points, but you saw a lot more from Jared Allen, who had 16. You saw Evan Mobley score 5, and yeah, he took a little bit of some ill-advised shots, but I think Evan Mobley had a really big impact in this game, even if his box score numbers say otherwise. Caris LeVert was able to turn it on a little bit too. Like, the Cavs were able to get some production from their bench as well. Like, the first half just kind of felt like maybe it's, and I was listening to the radio broadcast for the beginning of the first quarter, and Tim Alcorn shared that the Cavs got in 5 a.m. our time yesterday, or 2 a.m. Los Angeles time, and then there's the 3-hour time change, and then there's also the end of daylight savings. Like, maybe the Cavs are a little sluggish, maybe it's the LA nightlife just kind of keeping on, but it didn't feel like the Cavs really kind of playing their brand of basketball. And in the second half, you really just watched them turn up the intensity quite a bit, especially in the third quarter when the Lakers only scored 16 points, and then for the better part of the beginning of the fourth as well, when Los Angeles scored 5 points through the first 6 minutes, I believe. Which, this is a very good game and a very good statement win for the Cavs. And I think, again, like you said, they were faced with a little bit of adversity, and maybe last year they would have crumbled if they had to face it like this, but they responded well, and then they seized momentum and never looked back. And this was a good win for Cleveland at the end of the day.
This is also why it helps to have guys like Donovan Mitchell, why it helps to have a guy like Darius Garland, right? Like, so Mitchell finishes his game with 33 points, 10 of 17 from the field. He got 33.7 on a night where he was 1-7 from three.
That's the crazy statistic for me. Is he's 1-7 from three? I'm just like, huh.
Yeah, 12-13 from the line, just utterly attacking, utterly efficient in that regard. Darius Garland, meanwhile, 24 points, 7-7 from the line, 3-9 from three, 7 assists, five turnovers. So like had the seven assists, was at least juicing some things in that way. But those guys combined took 20 of the Cavs' 36 free throws. This was about those two as a duo. This was about those two kind of carrying stuff while it was a non-factor for Mobley and Allen in the first half, right? Like they have in the first half, they each had 21 points, made 12 shots combined. You know, Garland 36 from three and a half, all that stuff. They had to be scorers. The team had to have them be that in the first half because they were getting nothing from everybody else. You flip it to the second half, you know, they both still have double digit points in the half, but you know, you get 16, as you mentioned, from Jared Allen. Then you get seven from Kevin Love off the bench. You get seven from Jetty Osman off the bench. You got that Dean Wade dunk. Like you got enough from everybody else where things got easier paired with the defensive effort. And it all started with those two guys, with those backcourt. Like, I mean, this is like ultimately we can look at the Mitchell trade. We're going to look back at the Mitchell trade in long order. Look back in time at like how it's aged, what the Cavs have accomplished, all of that stuff, right? Like that'll be like something we do at some point.
Yeah.
This is why like he is worth all of those picks. this is why.
Hot take, you know, hot take. This again will not go down as the worst trade in Cavaliers franchise history. It is interesting to note, besides Donovan Mitchell being sensational, I had to look this up, but Beast Girls in the chat noted that the Cavs had ended their losing streak against the Lakers. And yeah, it's true. The Cavs had lost five in a row against Los Angeles up to this point. So LeBron was definitely getting the better of them. And I think maybe that getting that monkey off your back feels good too. But yeah, Donovan Mitchell was sensational. He's just, his offensive motor is just incredible for me to watch. Just like, it's just constantly running hot. And you know, I keep thinking like he's going to shut off eventually. He's going to cool off. He's going to stop trying to go after the throat of an opponent, but he kept doing so night after night after night. And like you said, his three-point shot wasn't falling, but he was incredibly aggressive on the interior. He was incredibly aggressive with the Lakers and drawing fouls and getting to the free throw line. And I want to look at his first half stats real quick. I mean, he was 9 of 9 from the free throw line in the first half. So, like, he did a lot of work. And to be more specific, he was 9 of 9 in the first quarter. So he did a lot of work in the first quarter where he got the Lakers in foul trouble early. And I kind of pushed the snowball off the mountain a little bit, at least. And it was building momentum as they headed towards halftime.
Evan, what did you make of the second half defense? We're going to end our first segment on that because I found it to be just like so much situationally better. Like in the first half, you saw stuff like Dean Wade is coming up on Russell Westbrook and getting in Westbrook's face almost, right? And Westbrook like will just dart by him and score. And in the second half, they're like, Russ, the rest of the Lakers, we know you don't want to shoot threes. We know you're not good at it. Please go and do that. Like, please just go ahead and take these shots that we feel comfortable with you taking. And then Mobley's eating up passing lanes. Allen's a little more physical inside and all that stuff. Like, it just felt like the first half was them just sort of playing just not themselves. And the second half, it's like Luke Walton, the halftime interview, basically was like, we need to be more physical and we need to be smarter. And it was like, oh, we did that. And it solved like all of their problems defensively.
Yeah, you're spot on. And to talk about the second half defense in general, friend of the podcast, Matt Moore, did point out a sequence in the beginning of the fourth where Dean Wade blankets Matt Ryan, and that leads to Kevin Love outlet pass, which gets tipped, and from Jetty Osman to a touch pass to Mitchell, and Mitchell had a Euro step and led to an and one. Like, the Cavs, at the end of the day, and this is always going to be one of their just core identities, is they're a defensive first team, and they're finding easier opportunities now because of that defensive first mentality on offense. So they can get, I mean, a little style points there. I'm watching the clip now, but easier buckets in transition or on offense because they're able to just kind of suck the life out of the Lakers. And I'll go a little deeper on that when we start breaking down some stats and stuff too.
Yeah. All right. Second segment, we are going to do a breakdown with our awards. So we'll do MVP, stat of the night, play of the night. Evan, it is worth pointing out though that this was the Cavs' first win over LeBron since they had Baron Davis. Think about that. Think about that for a second.
That is interesting to think about.
Think about how long ago that was. And obviously LeBron played for the Cavs again for a stretch and all that stuff, but the Cavs had not won since they had Baron Davis and J.J. Hickson and all of these guys way back in, like, I want to say that would have been 2011, like March 2011, something like that. Like, it has been a long, 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 long time. We were in high school.
Yeah, well, yeah, Yes, we were in high school. Holy cow. Well, late high school, early college is when they last beat LeBron. But yeah, Baron Davis was rocking 85, which is still like an iconic jersey number when you think about it at the end of the day. And the trickle-down effect that resulted in this Cavs team forming can be linked to this Baron Davis trade.
Yeah, considering the who they got via trading him to the... all that stuff.
Just open your third eye if you want to know.
Starting lineup in that game. This is so bleak. Baron Davis, Anthony Parker, Alonzo G, J.J. Hickson, Ryan Hollins. Coming off the bench in this game, Luke Herangode, Christian Ayanga, Sky Ayanga, Daniel Booby Gibson, and Ramon Sessions.
Traded to the Lakers, too.
And then Joey Graham played 3 minutes coming off the bench.
You know what, man? Byron Scott didn't do much as head coach of the Cavs other than fold his arms and look really disappointed on every possession. But that one night, there was something different to it. But let's hit pause. Let's talk more about the current LeBron situation and how the Lakers just don't appreciate him. What was the actual quip I'm going for here? Because I don't have the script in front of me. Either way. How long will he be taken for granted?
Hold on, let me pull just real quick. Joe, cut it out. I see what you're doing here, buddy, and I love you, but what are you doing here? All right.
Blue Chew's not the sponsor this episode, so we can't really endorse that.
It's been
statement,
years since we did a Blue Chew ad read. But all right.
Chris, you know Evan, who is sponsoring us today?
Prize Picks!
Prize Picks. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. To play, pick 2 to 5 players, and if they go score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, you can win up to 10 times your money on any entry. No competing against other people. It's just you versus the projections made available. Prize Picks offers projections on any sport that you watch. This includes NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, PGA, college football, men's college hoops, women's college hoops, soccer, WNBA, esports, NASCAR, tennis, MMA, boxing, disc golf, Eurobasket, cricket, and more. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy, and they offer safe and fast withdrawals. PrizePix is currently operational in over 30 states in Canada and should be operational in Ohio turn the calendar year. But download the PrizePix apps or go to prizepix.com if you're interested to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code LOCKEDON. So that means if you deposit $100, PrizePix will give you $100 back. If you deposit $50 dues, PrizePix will give you 50 big ones right back at you. So don't forget to enter promo code LOCKEDON at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. That's PrizePix. Check them out today and use promo code LOCKEDON.
All right, we're back here on the Locked On Cavs podcast. I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Damrell. Evan, let's give out our game awards. If you're joining us, just catching us live for the first time, haven't heard one of our game recaps before, what we do is give out our game awards, so MVP, stat of the night, play of the night. Evan, we have the same MVP, and we hit on them in segment one, but it's Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, just two all-star the all-star backcourt absolutely just cooking the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, it's by and far the two best players on the floor tonight for Cleveland. Chris wrote Mitchell and Garland. I wrote Garland and Mitchell, just, you know, perfectly balanced as all things should be. But it is a little wild still to see and just kind of get a feel for it with the old eye test that Mitchell and Garland do look very comfortable out there. And again, the Cavs are only 8 games into the season at this point. 8 or 9. No, they're 8 games into the season at this point. So it's still just really impressive
This was game 9. They're 8-1.
Okay, they're 8-1. So they're 8-1. So they're 9 games into the season. But 9 games into the season, and this is only game 2, realistically, that Mitchell and Garland have played serious minutes together. But they just look so composed. They look so poised. They look so comfortable with one another. And I know Bickerstaff will say that they don't want the offense to lean solely on those two, but it's going to go through those two quite a bit. And it's impressive to see that there really isn't a ton of growing pains right now. And it's a lot of good momentum where I thought the Cavs were kind of at point A. It looks like they're past point B at this point and heading towards C, where C is they look more complete. So I'm interested to see what they look like maybe 50 games into the season, but I'm pleasantly surprised with how well they performed within these first 9 games and rarely 2 games together.
So I can be, because of just how I'm wired, very try to be even keeled, right? I I'm already at this team is going to be a top three seed and win like 52 games. I think I'm just there. I think this team is that good. I think this team, there are things that I still want to see how it works out. Like, you need LeVert and Osmond and Wade in particular to just kind of keep hitting and stay healthy and all that stuff. Maybe there's a trade to be made. But just based on the how good Mitchell has been, I think he has been playing the best basketball of his career. How good Garland has been largely since he's come back, and it's, you know, just the two games that he's played. I think Mobley's defense has been astounding. I think I expect Jared Allen to be better. I haven't looked at the numbers on Allen yet, but it feels like he's like a little off of his last year. I would expect him to be a little more accurate in terms of his finishing at the rim at times, a little more physical. They've been so good and so dominant and so just energized. This is one of the best teams in the East. I'm not ready to go say they're like better than the Bucks or anything yet, but whoo boy, this is a legitimately very good and impressive basketball team. I'm just there.
Yeah, I'm there too. I'm a firm believer this Cavs team is just going to be doing a lot of fun and exciting and interesting things across the board. We'll see how the Cavs look against the Bucks when they play each other later this month, of course, but that's going to be a really interesting matchup because there's a lot of stuff that worked against the Lakers where you thought, oh, this would maybe pose some troubles for Cleveland, but like they're very dynamic and not so much static in their identities. They're comfortable being uncomfortable at times, and I'm interested to see how they look on a second of a back-to-back against the Clippers tomorrow night, just to see, like, what are some differences here? Do Mitchell and Garland not play just because of the knee and the ankle concerns? Like, there's a lot of stuff in play here, but if you're the Cavaliers and you're looking at how your first 10 games go this season, this could be, I mean, obviously not the perfect start because you would have beat the Raptors in the home season opener, but this is pretty damn close to perfect if in the grand scheme of things, just with how things are going for them so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's go on to our play of the night. Evan, let's go stat of the night, actually. That's the wrong order. So 34 free throws for me. The Cavs were not like a particularly good like field goal shooting team in this game. They're 32% from three for this game overall. That is below what they've been. It's only 8 threes made. That's not a ton. 44% from the field overall. They got to the line 36 times, only missed 4, so 32 from 36 from the free throw line. That is something they've been really hammering. You can tell it how they're playing and how aggressive they're being. It is getting them out of game. It is helping them win games where the offense doesn't look great. And that, to me, is a level up from last year. That is a clear thing that they weren't necessarily doing last year.
No, it absolutely isn't. I think it's an interesting development in how this Cavs team operates. I think adding Donovan Mitchell clearly changes a lot of things, too, in terms of just like offensive dynamism. But like you said, they did not shoot the ball well in this game, just to be frank. But like the fact that they're able to make such a huge impact with the free throw line, and like contrary to what my mentions were saying about these officials, like they shot 15 more free throws than the Lakers. Like, you can think about how folks get concerned about just like being the visiting team, blah, 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 yada, yada, whatever. So this was a good game for the Cavs. Like, just overall, like, this is one you can hang your hat on. Like the two Celtics games as well, or pretty much any game where the Cavs have just had a very good win and just different views and everything else. Like, this is a good game to hang your hat on, chop, spit up the film, all that stuff, and just regurgitate things. But my stat of the night, just because I don't want to be running the second segment too long, is the fact that the Cavs gave up 38 paint points in the first half to the Lakers, and that's kind of why the Lakers had a lot of momentum. Mm-hmm. But they only gave up 18 in the second, and that's pretty much Los Angeles' primary source of offense because they only made 8 of 27 three-pointers and 12 of 21 free throws overall. So, like, they're looking to get looks in the paint, and the Cavs kind of walled them off, and we talked about it a bit in the first segment. The defense the Cavs were playing kind of reacted a little bit. They studied the tape. They broke some stuff down that they were seeing and made adjustments, which I think that's the more refreshing thing, is you're seeing Bickerstaff make in-game adjustments too to kind of make the game a little bit more easier on either end of the floor. So like that's just a noteworthy thing to me. Like, huh, like the Cavs got worked in the paint, but they really shut down the Lakers' water in the second half.
Anthony Davis took 2 shots in the second half.
That's nuts. That's nuts.
He was 1 of 2 from the field, 0 free throws. In the first half, Anthony Davis, 6 of 12 from the field, 0 of 1 from the line, 12 points, 4 boards, 17 minutes. Played 14 minutes, took 2 shots in the second half. Like, that's astounding, considering I thought, like, Davis was awesome and doing really well against Allen in the first half for stretches there. Really quick play of the night. mine is just Evan Mobley pass it to Kevin Love inside 18.
Yeah,
eight,
make, gives him an same play of the night.
82-80 lead, and then he can test LeBron, force a miss at the other end. Evan Mobley, two-way superstardom flashing is just like...
That's what I'm talking about. Like,
it's great.
Yeah, Knighty's not great offensively scoring the ball. Like, he's still making an impact in so many different ways, and that's what just makes him great. And before we head out, Chris, here's an interesting thing I saw from StatMuse just moments ago. The Cavs are the second best defense in the league, the second best record in the league, right behind the Bucks and just ahead of the Suns. Like, did you think we'd be having this conversation right now where, like, Cleveland's just a very elite two-way team and they're arguably nipping at the heels of Milwaukee for best team in the league overall?
No, I did not. I thought this would be a team that was definitely in the playoff picture, above the play-in. This team is, I think, genuinely very, very good. They also just gave... I'm flipping through tweet deck real quick before that site goes to heck, and JB Bickerstaff got the Junkyard Dog chain.
Yeah, those adjustments. And
he took a photo like crouched down with the rest of the team, and
I'm excited to see Jimmy Longo's photo because I have a feeling it's gonna either go hard or be really corny. So one of the two,
probably like 50-50 on that one.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Fair.
Yes. All right. One more break. We're gonna come back. If you guys have any questions about this game, submit them. We're going to answer those, look ahead to the Clippers game as well in segment three. But what a big Cavs win, just absolutely beating down LeBron's Lakers in the second half to improve to 8-1 on the year. And Brady, he said Stat Muse, not Stat Goose, I believe. Did you say Stat Goose or did you say Stat Muse?
I said Stat Muse, but Stat Muse.
Muse.
I don't know.
Muse, not Goose.
A pronunciation's hard.
That's true.
Break.
Okay, well...
Quick
we'll
break for the audio listeners who aren't tuning in live. We'll be
yes,
right back.
But we're live, so we're just going to... Jake, producer Jake, who's not with us, put that ad in right here, buddy. All right. Last segment. If you have questions,
let us know.
Submit them in the chat now. All of you in here. Someone has to have a good Cavs question.
While we wait for folks to ask questions, did you have any other quick notes or hits that maybe didn't have enough meat on the bone for the first segment, or he couldn't fit in the second segment because we were too busy effusing praise on Mitchell and Garland?
LeVert remains, like, he did not... I don't think this was, like, a particularly good LeVert game, but
I agree.
He has moved beyond us, I think, needing to fully... He has played well enough in the first 9 games. Look, we are 10% into the NBA season at this point, which is kind of a crazy thing to think about, that we are, like, that far into the season. I look at what he does, and it's like, I think we can start considering that he can have positive games without just needing to score. Like, he was 5 of 10 from the field, 1 of 2 from 3, 12 points, but he had 3 assists, only 1 turnover. Really struggled defending LeBron early, but looked better late, especially as the game got a little less competitive on the Lakers side. But, like, I think he's been... he's been maybe the most pleasantly surprising player to me to start the year.
I agree with that.
Him or Jetty.
Jetty, but I think Jetty makes perfect sense as a bench player. I think, like you said, Caris LeVert is starting to show his chops of making an impact without having to score the basketball to look like a functional player out there. And again, Isaac Okoro hasn't done anything 10 games into the season almost, or actually 10 games into the season nearly, and we just hasn't pushed LeVert in a way that can really just like say like, okay, Isaac Okoro can take over as the starting three for this team. But like, LeVert has done a lot of things, like whether it's playmaking or scoring, it's just little stuff that he can hopefully tweak and improve, and maybe just it's comfort and familiarity with like Mitchell, Garland, and not being like a primary option sometimes. Like he has said, it's tough to kind of find that balance of like, hey, on this play, I'm getting my number called and I'm going to score, or now I'm going to be passing and looking to make an opportunity or score like that. And you kind of got a good sense of what Caris LeVert could function as with this team at the start of the second half, where he had a three-pointer and then he had a nice assist to Jared Allen where he could have tried and gone for a mid-ranger or a floater, but instead he did the wraparound pass to Allen, which led to an easier dunk, because it's just a really nice balance. Like, I am pleasantly surprised and happy to say I was wrong with Caris LeVert as the starting three for the Cavs, and right now it's still their biggest weakness on this team is just their overall wing depth, but like, they're able to make it work, one, because of the overwhelming star power they have, and two, what they're getting from LeVert and Osman, at least, because, and Wade to an extent too, like, just guys who are getting the spot minutes at the three are making the most of their opportunity, and it's not sabotaging the Cavs actively on the court.
All right, we got a couple questions. Richie Fleck asked the first one. What is the biggest weak spot of the Cavs so far this year? Evan, what do you think their biggest weak spot is right now?
Well, I just said it. It's all wing depth still. I still think you have some concerns. I think defensively it's mitigated because the Cavs scheme is very much, hey, we're going to funnel as many people as possible towards Mobley and Allen or one of those two, and those two are just going to kind of make life hell on the interior, and then you're watching Mobley just get more and more comfortable defending in isolation, and you're getting effort from Donovan Mitchell, who has a freaking long wingspan too. Like, the Cavs are making a lot of what should have been flaws kind of be masked a little bit. So that's what I think it is. What do you think their biggest weakness is just this at this juncture?
I think a healthy Ricky Rubio would solve a lot of my issues about it needing to be so much relied on Mitchell and Garland. I think just him being smart as a passer, I think the defense he could provide, I think that's the kind of piece. Getting a wing would obviously maybe be ideal, but like finding those wings is really hard, and you traded a bunch of your chips to get Mitchell, as you should have done. So like Rubio coming back and being functional would seemingly solve a lot of the issues I kind of have. I think he just would make everything functional a little bit better. If you got a return on Okoro that fit, or like he improved enough to be a real rotation guy, then that solves some of your problems too. But Rubio kind of solving maybe just a little more stout on the perimeter to ease some of the burden on your bigs, as good as they are, and then give you a little more playmaking juice would be sort of interesting. Okay, let's move on. We got a bunch of questions very similarly.
We got a really good active audience tonight. Thanks, y'all.
Yes. We got a really good question. We got a couple of these questions about Mobley. I'm going to show the first one from great-103. Has Mobley reached his ceiling, or does he have more to go? This is like, he is... Evan Mobley very much could be the best player in this Cavs team in a year and a half, 2 years.
Correct. It's just offensively, he still has a ways to go. And I think with Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland having the ball in their hands so much, they have more opportunities to score. And I think Mobley is still a little reliant on those two. Like, the handle is still a little loose, even though like he has talked about bringing the ball up in transition or initiating the offense is like a point Mobley forward, I don't know, alien. There's the potential there. It's just, it's going to take work. It's going to take time. And I think, again, like Chris noted many, many moons ago, the fact that the Cavs have Donovan Mitchell in tow now kind of mitigates the pressure a little bit for Mobley to like step up offensively, but you're still seeing a lot of stuff. Like this game against the Lakers, again, didn't score the basket well at all, but he was able to pass, he was able to defend, he was able to get steals, blocks, rebounds. Like he was all over the floor tonight, where like, okay, yeah, but he didn't score the ball well, but at the end of the day, like this was a successful game for Evan Mobley. And the only reason I say it like that is because it's kind of how the Charge are tracking his brother Isaiah. Like, they don't expect Mobley to be like, or Isaiah to be like a 20 plus point scorer. And I think realistically right now, you don't expect Evan to be one either. But if you're able to get a little bit of everything from him, that's a win. And you just watch him grow and get more comfortable and hand the physicality that he kind of has to deal with, because he's playing a lot more five now too. Like, a lot of different stuff he's learning and evolving with in real time. And it'll get better. I think it's going to get better. And like Chris said, maybe this time next year, or even the following season, like he is the best player on Cleveland's team.
He's so good defensively, and I think like some of it obviously isn't just going to show up in raw box score stuff, but like the rotations he makes, the passing lanes he plays himself into, positionally knowing where to be, all of this stuff. It is like insanely high level stuff. He is already an all defensive level player, and I think he's shown stuff on offense. Tonight was not a good offensive game. Like he took a fadeaway jumper that wasn't good. He's much better when he's decisive and quick and isn't loading up, and he uses his length. We'll see if the 3-point shot ever comes, but there's no way this is his. There's absolutely no way that this is his ceiling. Okay. Yes. Let's do one more here. We got another question about Mobley's offensive element. I think we already hit that. I'm not concerned about it. I think the thing to watch, I would say, with that is his handle. If his handle can get a little tighter, particularly not in transition, but in the half court, it'll unlock a lot for him. Okay. Last thing. We've got a couple questions about Okoro as well.
Yeah. I'll pull one up.
Go.
Is it time for the Cavs to see what they can get for Okoro?
And then we had Johnny production.
Yeah,
over development, but he'll play in the second half. Evan, you take that one first.
So I think there's going to be intrigue with Isaac Okoro. He is very good as a perimeter defender. I think him playing aggressively without fouling at times is still an issue and a concern with him. And yeah, JB Bickerstaff said he was in a box last season and they didn't want him to do too much offensively. And I think it's tough because I think Cleveland has really penciled or figured out a lot of its rotation, which is the starting five, and then Jetty Osman, Kevin Love, and then one of Robin Lopez or Hollow Neto, depending on the night. And then eventually that's going to become Ricky Rubio. And ideally, Bickerstaff wants to go 10 deep, but he's been going 8 deep for the most part this season. So maybe Okoro has to just find opportunities to earn minutes when he can. But I don't see it. And I think, yeah, maybe if you're the Cavs and you want to maybe go swing for a bigger-ish wing player instead of what you have in terms of trade assets, and maybe you don't want to like give up too much, or like you think how Karis, you like how Karis LeVert's looking as your starting three, and maybe you just go get bench support help elsewhere. Yeah, you could use Okoro as an asset to maybe go make a move to consolidate the back end of your rotation, but we'll see. It's been very disappointing on offense, his production thus far. I think the 2 preseason games and the infamous feature on Noah's Ark really was like a kiss of death to the start of the season for Isaac Okoro, but we'll see. I'm not ready to sell the ship quite yet, but I've been quietly concerned with how much he's been struggling. And like, I know JB owned up to it Friday night against Detroit, saying it's all on him and everything else, but like at the same time, like, yeah, JB can say all this stuff, but Okoro has to kind of back it up as well, saying like, oh no, JB, if you give him more minutes or give him more opportunities, he'll shine more. But Okoro just hasn't done much with his limited chances.
Yeah, I mean, Garland in this game at one point in the first half dribbled into like a double team on the opposite block instead of just swinging it to Okoro wide open in the corner. I think he is tricky to trade because it's like he's out of the package in some ways, right? Like people have seen him play. He's contract extension eligible after the season. There's like the financials.
Are you calling him Stinky Pete in Toy Story 2 where he's out of the box?
No, I didn't think that. I was just thinking of him as like when people get like mad when there's like a little like bend in their Nikes or whatever, and I'm just like, it's a crease. Like, you wore the shoe. Good. That's fine. That happens. I think one of the tricky things with him is like, you see defensively that there's stuff he does well, and then but it's just the offense is so zero. Like, he cut into the lane tonight, and there's just like the big who he should be cutting behind has already, his defender has already slid into the block where he should be cutting into an open pass. So Mitchell has to try to fire it in between two guys. And it's just like, it makes the passes harder on cuts even. So I think like if you're just thinking realistically about salary, it's like him and Windler are the two salaries that if you're saying, okay, we get to like $11-ish million, what can we flip that for? Is there something there we can do? Realistically, but I think he is more than anyone else that we've seen play rotation minutes this year. I think he's playing for his Cavs future in a lot of ways. He just is, and that's unfortunate. And it has obviously just not totally gone to plan for him. He played 6 minutes in this game, and this is a guy who played really heavy minutes as a rookie. It's a really, really tricky place for him to be in his career, and you empathize with him on a human level, but this is what happens. When a team gets really good, when a team accelerates, and you have a guy like Donovan Mitchell, you have a guy like Darius Garland, you have Evan Mobley, you have Jared Allen, you owe it to yourself to go for it. And if he gets squeezed out of that, I think that's just correct. That's just part of it.
It's the unfortunate reality of the situation. And you said it's about $11 million cobbled together. So for perspective, that's like what the money Dylan Brooks is making this season. That's the money Terrence Ross is making this season. So like, if you don't want to give up a pick, because the Cavs did give up a lot of assets to go get Donovan Mitchell. And I think now if you're Kobe Altman in the Cavs front office, you try to pitch the angle of, listen, Isaac Okoro is a former top 5 pick. He is a first round caliber player to some teams, I bet. And maybe you go swinging using that as an asset and a trade chip to go get it. Or you look down the list a little bit and maybe you don't include Windler. You use Windler in a separate transaction, or you look at other options. But it's limited in that like kind of niche space with those two combined.
You also could hold it until the summer, and that's not the easy thing to hear, but you could easily hold this till the summer. The league resets in a little bit. And you could see where things stand. And look, see where the new CBA stands as well. That's going to have an impact on all of this. We've said that a lot, but that's just the reality of it. Okay, let's wrap it up there. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in.
One last question.
What?
It's from RightQuick24. Do you see Garland and Mitchell playing tomorrow? That's a good question. I don't know. I don't think they will, but...
I don't see how you watch them play in this game and necessarily think that like something is like wrong. Like they both seem fine. I think the point of Friday is to rest them, so maybe they do play the back to back.
Yeah, that's a fair way to look at it. And we'll just see how they're feeling physically the day after as well. It's because it's a knee and ankle, maybe they had enough momentum to carry even this game, but with how well this win against the Lakers went, maybe you want to carry that momentum into Golden State so you beat the Clippers, take care of business. And that's the other thing, too, is they do have a little bit of time off. I believe they play the Warriors on Wednesday or Thursday, if I'm correct. Let me double check this in real time. Oh, they don't play till Friday, so...
Yeah, they play the... So they play the Kings on Wednesday.
So they could maybe they rest up Mitchell and Garland or one of those two on Wednesday against Sacramento and give them more time off against Golden State. But I don't know. The Clippers are just an interesting matchup because I think they're just a big level up from what the Lakers are, that you may need Mitchell and Garland out there to kind of keep some of this positive momentum you've been building on the court.
I would also kind of think that Garland's probably sick of having to sit out. He played three games.
And he bugs the coaching staff incessantly to play, so.
Yeah, I kind of expect both of them to play, but we'll see what they say. You won't really get an injury report. We'll find out pregame and all that. All right, thanks everyone for tuning in. It was fun to do this live. We'll try to do some more of these on Sunday. I know there's some of my mic stuff's not coming through clearly, but we'll figure that out for the next one. I'm not sure exactly what is going on there. But thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll be back on Tuesday. We'll recap. It'll probably be up a little later in the day Tuesday, but we will recap Cavs Clippers. We'll look ahead to Wednesday's game against the Kings. Thanks everyone for tuning in. It's been great being live. Have a good rest of your Sunday. Please subscribe, rate, review if you have not already. Be well.